Good morning and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Cave. I'm from Chicago and I'm going to be the host for the presentation today. Today is Sunday, September 29th, 2024. Let me give you the share ID numbers for Friday. Friday, September 27th, for the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 21,781. That's 21781. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, 21,783. 21783. This morning, A Vision for You presents Grace and Action, a 12-step transformation. Our speaker is going to share her story of transformation. She's going to highlight the text and try to thread that together with her personal experience and insight. So looking forward to that. You know, I was thinking in Japan, where's he going with this, right? In Japan, there's a ceramic art that's a great analogy, I think, that seems to capture the true essence of recovery and called kintsugi. And it's a Japanese art that repairs broken pottery, which then renders a new piece that's more exquisite, right? Before it was broken. And isn't this kind of akin to the miracle of our practical program of action? You know, the art of creating beauty from brokenness. You know, this idea of putting something that's fractured back together and in the process restoring it to something beyond its original glory. That's the essence of this spiritual way of life. You know, when we implement the 12 steps, we don't just experience a transition from, let's say, sick to better. No, rather we really become a sort of co-conspirator with power. We access power and we move to a place that's radically more radiant than we ever dared to hope. And, you know, look around this fellowship, look around the room here. You know, frankly, you're not going to have to search very hard to find people who were once broken. They were fractured. Their lives were utterly, shattered by compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors that often accompany this disease. Quicksand is a mixture of sand and water that it looks solid, but it acts like a liquid when you disturb it. And here's the thing about quicksand. If you're going to be saved from it, you literally need to be extracted. You have to be pulled out. And in order for that to happen, you have to cooperate. You have to stop fighting. If you thrash about in the quicksand, good luck. You're going to go down faster. You know, we learn in our text that Bill Wilson, he'd been thrashing about, sort of disturbing the quicksand by using his self-will to extricate himself. And it didn't work. And here's his own words on page 8. He says, "No words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand," he says, "stretched all around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master." And then he goes on, "Trembling, I stepped from the hospital, a broken man." You know, it sounds like he was done drinking, right? Should be. Well, guess what? If you know the story, he wasn't. He wasn't done yet. You know, someone may be on the line this morning thinking, "Surely I'm done compulsively overeating after last night, after this morning." Now, you're going to hear a true story this morning of someone who's just like Bill, really. It doesn't matter if it's 100 years later, just like you and me in 2024. She didn't get here on a winning streak, that I can assure you. And I'll bet she can relate to Bill's words when he picks up once more again on page 8. He said, "Everyone became resigned to the certainty that I would have to be shut up somewhere or would stumble along to a miserable end. How dark it is before the dawn." You know, so the woman we're going to hear about this morning, she's from Brazil. I know her story well because her story is our story. And Bill captures it so poetically, really. He says, "In reality, that was the beginning of my last debauch. I was soon to be catapulted into what I like to call the fourth dimension of existence. I was to know happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful than pastors. See, the steps ask that we actively engage in the process of letting go, that we be awakened, aware, conscious throughout the experience of the implementation of the steps. That's what this program, you know, asks us to do. And we have to appreciate the magnitude and the mystery of the miracle that unfolds. Joining us this morning to share her experience of spiritual transformation is Dani P. from Brazil. And Dani's a trusted servant in this fellowship, and she's dedicated to the practice and the teaching of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of OA. Now, she may speak several languages. I know she does. But you know, the one language she speaks most fluently, everyone speaks it all around the world. It's called the language of the heart. So please join me in welcoming Dani P. to the line this morning. Good morning, Dani.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you so much for this very kind and inspiring introduction. Good morning, everyone. I'm Dani P. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, only by God's grace and mercy, and I'm from Brazil. I live in São Paulo. I'm very grateful for this opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope with you today. What a blessing. Hopefully, by the end of this presentation, it will be clear that my journey is a combination of grace and action, resulting in a 12-step transformation. I would like to start my share with a prayer. God, please direct my thinking. Guide my words. Remove every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and others. Help me to be of maximum service today. Thy will not mine be done. So I believe I was born a compulsive overeater. And although I had a rough beginning in life, my mother was a teenager when she had me. She was only 16. My biological father abandoned us. And we had to move to Germany when I was only a few months so we could have a chance of a better life. But by the time I was 3 years old, my mother met a wonderful, caring, loving man. And he married her. And he raised me as his daughter. He was this extraordinary father, very, very kind, very loving. He gave us a wonderful life with a lot of stability, a lot of education. And also a very interesting life because of his work. We were always moving from country to country, and therefore I was exposed to different cultures, different places, beautiful places, different languages. This is how I got some language skills. And it was certainly a fascinating life. So although I grew up in this highly privileged environment with a lot of stability, opportunities, I was born a compulsive overeater. It's not the environment that makes me a compulsive overeater. What makes me a compulsive overeater is the allergy of the body and the twist of the mind. So I remember binging when I was 4 or 5 years old. I would wake up earlier and only child back then, and I would go to the kitchen and eat all the food I could find, all the leftovers, the old food, the cold food, the dried food, the bad food. My parents, they had a very intense social life. There were a lot of gatherings and guests, and I would love these occasions because there was a lot of food, and I would eat all the leftovers. I can't remember how many times I ate until the point where I was physically sick. I experienced physical discomfort of overeating. And I remember my father putting ice, packs of ice on my stomach so I would have some relief of this horrible abdominal pain that no medication could relieve. And I was constantly obsessed by the food. I was constantly thinking about the food, where I can get more food, and how do I get more food. I was very isolated. I felt different. I felt I didn't belong. I felt completely inadequate. I stared at the other children and I just couldn't understand how they could stop eating, how they could lose interest for food, and I couldn't, how they could enjoy their toys, their swings, their games, and I could enjoy those swings only for 5 minutes. Because I was constantly obsessed with the food. Actually, this disease deprived me of enjoying all the beautiful things God's grace has given me. I remember my parents telling me, "Danny, look at this beautiful landscape. Look at this beautiful mountain. Look at the snow. Look at this statue, this monument, the Eiffel Tower." I couldn't appreciate anything. I couldn't see beauty. I couldn't. Because I was constantly thinking about the food. And my parents, they made jokes about it, you know, anecdotes. They used to tell people, you know, "Don't ask Danny the places we have visited, or what she liked, what she has seen. She doesn't know. She doesn't remember. Just ask her what she ate. She will tell you." They were absolutely right. All my memories were about food. So I was, of course, an overweight child and an obese child. And by the time I was 8, 9 years old, I was placed on a diet by a doctor who told my mother that I was obese. And that's why I was experiencing some joint pain. And from that time on, my life was a series of vainless attempts to control this disease, to fight this disease, to battle this disease, at least the physical consequences. I did everything: diets, treatments, psychotherapy, FOS, all possible treatments. Nothing worked. Nothing. It worked until it didn't work anymore. By the time I was 14, I became a bulimic. This was another desperate attempt to control this disease. I engaged in vomiting, over-exercising. I took laxatives, diuretics. Bulimia was effective for a period of time in controlling my weight until it wasn't anymore because the disease is progressive. Bulimia really reminds me this part of Bill's story when he said, I commenced to forge the weapon that one day would turn in its flight like a boomerang and all but cut me to ribbons. Because not only bulimia after a short period of time did not control my weight anymore, I had all the massive harmful consequences of bulimic behaviors. I lost my teeth. I had gastric bleeding. I had esophageal bleeding. I had 5 ulcers. I had electrolyte imbalance. I was hospitalized multiple times. I developed an autoimmune disorder because of bulimia. This led me to infertility. And also, bulimia became a major facilitator of my compulsive overeating because I could eat an extraordinary amount of food, 24 slices of pizza, 2 pounds of cake, 1 gallon of ice cream. This was Friday night for me. I was always sick, always sick. You know, I was a very good student. I was always trying to perform well in school, maybe trying to compensate for my feelings of inadequacy and feeling less. But I don't even know how I finished high school because I was always sick. I was always missing school. And when I look at my education was certainly characterized by a lot of failures and some extraordinary achievements. One of them was to enter a public medical school in my country. So I was very good in giving short-term effort and determination. But in the long term, I had no discipline. I had no consistency. And that's why after entering medical school, I was put, after 2 years of failing, I was put on academic probation. And they wanted to expel me from medical school. And this is when I realized that if I wanted to have a diploma, I really needed to start dieting. And that's what I did. I dieted from med school. It was horrible. I was obsessive all the time. I had no friends. I didn't attend any social event. I would avoid all places, people. You know, I couldn't be exposed to food because my diet was so fragile. And this is how I graduated. And then I entered a residency program in São Paulo. I moved from my parents' house to São Paulo. And I entered a residency program here. And I gained 70 pounds, of course, in 3 years. And when I left residency, I thought to myself, okay, hey, now I will find the answer. I will get a job. I will have money to find the solution, to find the treatment for my disease. And when I finally had the money to pay for this very highly experienced psychiatrist in eating disorders and bulimia, very famous, very well known. He told me on our first appointment, you're hopeless. He told me I was suffering from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. He told me, you know, Danny, I'm going to be honest with you since you are a physician. I'm going to tell you, I have no hope for you. someone like you will not recover. We can talk about a harm reduction strategy if you want. I will give you a lot of medication, and maybe, who knows, maybe this will reduce the frequency of the episodes of compulsive overeating and purging. Who knows, maybe. But there is no recovery for you. So this was my doctor's opinion. This was 10 years ago. I was hopeless, helpless, defeated by medicine, by science, by everything, by all the attempts. And this is how I got to my first meeting of Overeaters Anonymous 10 years ago. I attended a face-to-face meeting in São Paulo, and I didn't find recovered members. There was very, very little recovery. There was no big book. There was a few available sponsors. But I found a loving fellowship with a lot of support, a lot of friends, a lot of well-intentioned people, and the tools. And I thought, recover, relying on the tools, relying on the food plan, attending meetings every day, reading all the OA literature. I have all the OA literature. I even translated it for OA. And making phone calls, doing a lot of service. I thought I could recover this way. You see, in my dishonesty, I was transferring the responsibility of my recovery to the fellowship. The fellowship is not designed to make me recover. The fellowship is designed to give me an environment of support and love while I'm recovering. I didn't understand that. And I was so dishonest that I was in a 12-step program without working the 12 steps. I didn't want any transformation. I just wanted to control the physical consequences of my disease. Because when I got to OA, I was almost 200 pounds, and I'm short. I'm 5'1". And I had a history of 23 years of bulimia. So I just wanted release of this pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. But because I wasn't working the steps, of course, I had no recovery. I just lost weight. And I've been maintaining a weight loss of 70 pounds for 8 years now. And I thought that I was recovering. I thought I was. I thought that abstinence, or at least I claimed I was abstinent. I thought abstinence could treat my disease. But the big book teaches me that it's the man of 30 that abstinence does not treat my disease. And my disease was still progressing. And all the bedevilments, they were true for me. I was having trouble in all my personal relationships. I can control my emotional nature. I was in prey to misery and depression. I could make a living, but I couldn't live up to my potential. You know, I was the type of person that I was always missing work on Monday because I was compulsive overeating during the weekend. So I had to get those really, really stable jobs where I didn't have a lot of responsibilities so they wouldn't fire me. I had this feeling of uselessness. I was full of fear. I was unhappy all the time. And I couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. I was just this resentment-producing machine. And I was driven by 100 fears. I was a fighter. I was always angry. And I was always fighting someone or something. I was fighting the healthcare system, the political system, the legal system. I was fighting the patients. I was fighting my coworkers. I was fighting with the nurses. I wasn't treating my disease. I wasn't treating the root of my problems, my selfishness, my self-centeredness, and its ramifications. My fears, my resentments, my secrets, my dishonesty, my harms. You know, I was trying to solve my problems with my self-seeking. I was a self-seeker. I was always seeking validation, approval, attention. I was victimized by this delusion that I could get out of this world satisfaction and happiness if only I managed well, if only I controlled everything. I was a big producer of confusion rather than harmony. So, you know, even being a very, very active member in the fellowship, I was still suffering from untreated spiritual malady. And the big book tells me that only when the spiritual malady is overcome, I can straighten out mentally and physically. And I was trying to straighten out physically and expecting that the mental disease and the spiritual disease would magically disappear. So 2.5 years ago, I had a relapse and I was contemplating suicide. I was convinced this was the end for me. I didn't know how OA could help me. There is very little recovery in my country. So I went to the OA website, from the general website from the fellowship, looking for recovery resources. And this was really Grace who led me to this website. And I found many, many interesting podcasts. And I didn't know any recovery podcasts. They do not exist in my country. And I found a series of podcasts on the importance of working the steps. And I started listening to them attentively. And I also found a podcast called Long-Term Recovery. And I said to myself, oh my God, does that exist? Long-term recovery? I better listen to this podcast. And I did. I did. So at that point, I'm convinced that of the importance of working the steps. And I'm listening to this fellow put this big book messenger on this podcast on long-term recovery, and I could immediately identify with his story. Actually, I never met someone in Norway or heard someone in Norway I could identify as I could with him. And I was truly inspired by his story, but I just would convince myself, yes, it doesn't exist. This miracle, it's not possible. And I was still highly depressed, and I was still suicidal. But I decided to go to this 11-step meeting. You know, I went to this virtual 11-step meeting, because since I was contemplating suicide, I thought to myself, I might as well get to know God better before I die. So I went to this meeting, and I remember I was writing my letter to God, and someone just posted in the chat the information to a big book meeting on Zoom. And I said to myself, okay, I have nothing to lose. So I went to this big book meeting, and this was really, really grace. As soon as I got to this meeting, I immediately recognized the voice from this fellow that I heard on the podcast of long-term recovery. And I was like, oh my God, he exists. And I was, you know, I felt at this meeting for the first time, I felt like Bill in front of Abby Thatcher. My ideas about miracles were drastically revised right then. Never mind the musty past. Here sat a miracle directly across the kitchen table. He shouted great tidings. And at long last, I saw, I felt, I believed. Yes, I saw recovery for the first time. I felt hope, and I believed this could happen to me. And I left this meeting with so much hope and a very, very clear message. Put the food down, get a sponsor, and work the steps for the big book. This was the message. So I started going through the book and reading the book and listening to the podcast, because I had some previous exposure to the big book, but I couldn't understand it. Of this message, I really needed a big book messenger. And only by God's grace, I found him. And I found this amazing meeting. My first sponsor was a Brazilian sponsor. I was too afraid to ask for sponsorship at this meeting, that where I was new and I didn't know anybody. So I'm very grateful to this Brazilian lady who knew very well the big book, because she's in another fellowship, and she agreed on sponsoring me for the big book, although she also made me work through some OA pamphlet. But I'm very grateful, because only by God's grace, I got the help I really needed. A sponsor, putting the food down. So I understood with the doctor's opinion, the exact nature of my disease, the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind, and that the only hope for me was a psychic change, was a radical psychic change, was a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening as a result of working the steps. So suddenly I realized that the only thing I wasn't doing in OA is what I was supposed to be doing. You know, this is how dishonest I was. And I was so mesmerized by this book. As I went through this book, I've never seen in my life something so didactic, something so crystal clear. You know, the doctor's opinion tells me, what is my problem? Then what's the solution and how to implement the solution? And then once I have experienced this transformation, how do I maintain this transformation by working with others and by practicing the principles in all my affairs, in the family, in my work setting, with my significant other, in the fellowship. So this book is really God's grace. It was really God-inspired. So I worked for the step, and I really needed step 4 and 5. This is when freedom began for me. I had no idea how much I needed step 4 and 5. I had no idea who I was. I didn't know who I was, what I felt, what I thought, what I liked. I was always playing a role. I was always wearing a mask. I had so many misconceptions about life. I had no idea how effective my disease was in blocking this internal system of information. I had no intimacy with myself. I didn't know who I was. I had no idea. I was always wearing a mask. I was always trying to impress people with my looks, with my performance, with my profession. I had no idea. So I really needed to swallow and digest some big chunks of truth about myself. And as I went through this inventory, I realized how driven I was to justify my existence, you know, how driven I was to prove I had value, that I was worthwhile. I was constantly relying on people, things, and circumstances to supply me with validation, because I thought validation could fix me. Of course, I was wrong. And, you know, I can tell you I have very, very legitimate reasons to become a physician. I genuinely wanted to help people. I had compassion for mankind's suffering. But medicine was a great way to obtain value. And by working the steps, what I realized is that my value comes from my relationship with God. My value comes from God. My value is intrinsic, is inherent, is given to me. My value is God's grace. So I realize that this relationship with power, and this is what this book is about. This book is about enabling me to find power, a power that will solve all my problems and to have a relationship with this power. So I realized that this relationship was transforming me, that God was removing this validation seeking. And the big book tells me how this relationship is going to go. He's the employer. He's the director. He's the father. And the book also says what will happen if I nurture and cultivate this relationship by working the steps on a daily basis. When I sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. I had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what I needed. If I kept close to him by doing my step 10 and 11, and perform his work well by doing step 12. Established on such a footing, I was beginning to experience transformation. I became less and less interested in myself, in my little plans, my little designs, my self-seeking. More and more, I became interested in seeing what I could contribute to life as I felt new power flow in, as I enjoyed peace of mind, as I discovered I could face life successfully. As I became conscious of his presence, I began to lose my fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. That's a beautiful promise. So today, how am I today? Well, the big book tells me helping others is the foundation stone of my recovery. So I sponsor a lot, and that's why I work less. I was always working too much, mainly to obtain validation. But excessive work, in my case, it's not compatible with recovery. I need time. I need time to recover and to remain recovered one day at a time. So my work schedule wasn't compatible with this recovery. And the spiritual life is not a theory. I need to live it. You know, a kindly act once in a while isn't enough. And working with others not only ensures me immunity and protection, working intensively with others, it also has given me great joy. I met amazing people, a host of friends. In this big book meeting, in this meeting, I have a wonderful sponsor, a vision sponsor, who's very helpful to me. And as the book says, life will take on a new meaning to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you. to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and each other is the bright spot of our lives. That's true. All the miracles that have happened in my life. I became a better physician. You know, I thought my patients, they really needed me. They don't need me. They need good medical attention. So I just stopped trying to save them. And I started working in collaboration with them, trying to be helpful and useful to them. I became a better daughter, a lot of amends to my parents, to my sister. I became a better friend. I became a better sponsor, mainly because amazing sponsors that I've met or that I had, they taught me everything I know about sponsorship. And so many big book messengers taught me everything I know about this big book. So I was highly trained, you know, to perform God's work. This was God's grace, but I needed to take action. I needed to implement this program of action. I needed to work the steps, and I continue to work the steps on a daily basis. There is not a single day that I don't start my day on step 11. I finish my day on step 11. I do step 10 throughout the day. I sponsor, and I'm sponsored. I sponsor a lot of Brazilian women, also Brazilian men. I try to carry this message to the best of my ability. I have some sponsors also in the U.S. and Canada. I learned so much from them. I've witnessed every time, you know, the big book says, rarely have we seen. In my little experience, you know, I'm just recovered for 2 years and 2 months. I've never seen someone failed who has thoroughly and precisely followed the instructions. I've never seen. So I'm very, very grateful for this book, for this wonderful message, for all the beautiful tools and resources God's grace has put in my journey. And I'm very grateful for this meeting. This meeting has helped me so much in my recovery. You know, Vision for You. This meeting reminds me this poem of Sam Shoemaker, I Stand by the Door. Vision is really this meeting standing by the door, waiting for someone like me. Desperately looking for this door that leads to God, that leads to freedom, that leads to redemption. This is vision. And what I pray today is may I stand by the door today. May I be useful. May I be helpful to others, because it fills my life with purpose and with joy. So thank you so much for letting me share.
Wow, Dani, thank you so much. We're all so grateful. Such a powerful, powerful example of the transformation experience. You know, you did a beautiful job, and we're very grateful. And first, please hang on. We're going to get to a question and answer phase at this point. Before we do that, also at the end of the recorded phase of the program, we will ask Dani for her contact information. So if you're not able to ask her a question, she'll give that contact information where you can reach out to her directly. I also want to give you the share ID for this morning's presentation. For Dani P's presentation, that number is 21,784. That is 21784. So now, just a little bit of instruction. Questions only, please, in the interest of time. And so if you have a question you'd like to pose to Dani P, please unmute your phone by pressing star 1 and give me your first name and last initial. Who's got a question for Dani?
Henrietta R.
Marcia D.
Victoria
Marcia?
L.
Victoria.
Toby W.
Toby. So here's who I heard so far, you guys. I heard, I think it was Melissa at the top, but I could be wrong about that. But I heard Melissa. I'm sorry, I got you, Nick. Hold on one second so I can, at this point, I'll take some more names just a second. But here's who I heard so far. I think it was Melissa was the first person. There was Marsha. Elizabeth D. Okay, I'll put you on the end there. And then I heard Victoria, Toby, Nick. So those are the folks that I heard. Who gave their name that I did not hear? Or somebody else wants to jump in?
Hanayeta.
Okay, Hanayeta. Yep, got you. Anybody else? Okay, so here's our lineup for the first series of questions. I think it was a Melissa, not exactly sure, but the rest I think I got for sure. Marsha, Victoria, Toby, Nick, Elizabeth, and Hanayeta. Was it Melissa? Was that the first person? Because there were some people coming in at the same time. If we don't hear Melissa, then I was just making that up. Was that Elizabeth?
Yeah, it was Elizabeth.
Okay, that sounds right. So we're going to go Elizabeth followed by Marsha. And so if you're not Elizabeth, please mute your phone. And what question do you have for Dani? Elizabeth, good morning.
Hi, Larry. Can I be heard?
You can. Yeah, what question do you have for Dani?
Yeah, thanks, Larry. Dani, that was an extraordinary share and so compelling and hit me straight in the heart. My question is this. Can you share a little bit about how you take people, your sponsees, through the steps? And I'll mute myself.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can be heard, Dani. Thanks so much.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's a great question. So I take them as I was taught, you know, through the big book. I also benefit from a lot of the resources, the podcasts, from big book messengers, from recovered fellows. We have amazing resources, and so I use them as well. But I really was taught to let the big book do the heavy lifting. I don't think anyone will recover, in my opinion. I think this message, I think people might or might not recover if they implement this program of action. So I my sponsor, he was, let's go back to the book. Let's go back to the book. Let's see what the book tells us in this situation. My sponsor, she never starts talking to me without meditation, without prayer. So I was taught this is a spiritual program. And this is what I tell my sponsors all the time. This is a spiritual program. So the big book does the heavy lifting. I'm a step guide. I'm really a witness, you know. It works. Every time it works. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing. So I really follow the instructions and I do it very quickly. So of course, this depends on the availability of the sponsee, but I encourage them to do it really quickly because this is how I was taught. And I do it in maximum 2 weeks. So that's how I do it. I don't know if that's helpful.
Thanks for the question, Marcia. You know, I heard someone, excuse me, not Marcia, Elizabeth. Marcia, hang on tight because there was someone that came in before and it came to me and then I didn't put her name down. So the next person is going to be Nadia B with the question, and Nadia will then be followed by Marcia and we'll go from there. Nadia, good morning to you.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you for hearing me. Nadia B here, gratefully recovered in Connecticut. Danny, you've answered so many of my questions through your presentation, through your passionate presentation. And I can relate to seeking validation. Could you please help me fit this into a 10th step? Where does it fit? Is it, is it a character defect? Is it a part of self? How do you look at this validation from the standpoint of validation seeking from the standpoint of 12-step program?
Yeah, thank you so much. This is an amazing question, Nadia. Thank you so much. So what I've learned is that validation seeking is mainly my dishonesty. It's a manifestation of my dishonesty. I think that my value can come from a performance, from a relationship, from a person, and this is where I'm being dishonest. My value comes from God. I have intrinsic value. So why am I looking for value everywhere? So this is how I look at it. I think it's a manifestation of dishonesty. Also, a lot of selfishness, this idea that I can fix myself, that I know better. So if I get this validation, if I get this approval, if I get this relationship, then I will feel better about myself. So it's also this selfishness in the sense where I think I know better and I'm trying to fix myself with my human limited resources. So yeah, this is how I see. I don't know if it's helpful. Thank you. But it's a great question.
Thanks, Nadia. Okay, Danny, here's who we have next for you. We have Marcia with the question, followed by Victoria. Marcia, your turn. Good morning.
Good morning. Danny, it's just wonderful to hear God's transformation in your life. And so thank you. My question is, you talked a little bit about work imbalance. So how did you come to realize that you needed to cut back on your work to make more room for recovery? And what was helpful to you in that process? Thank you.
Thank you so much, Marcia. That's a great question. Well, I realized that I used my work to obtain validation. So that's why I was working obsessively, you know. It wasn't really for buy extra things, for more financial security. I had this delusion that my patients, they really, really need me. What if I'm not there? You know, if I'm not there, nothing's gonna happen. My patients, they don't need me. They need good medical care. And this obsession I had to save them really eroded my ability to be a good physician, you know. So, but I realized very early on that this design for living, this way of life, it took time, that I needed time for prayer, for meditation, to prepare my abstinent foods, to do my steps then, to sponsor others, to help others. And I'm involved in a lot of service as well, in a way. So I just decided to work less. I said to myself, okay, Daddy, this is your priority. You will need to learn to live with less money. Maybe you don't need this big house. Maybe you don't need this wonderful car. Maybe what you need is this wonderful life. So I don't know if that's helpful.
I think so, absolutely. Okay, thank you, Marcia. Okay, next up with the question is Victoria, followed by Toby. Victoria, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Hi, I'm Michelle, and I'm a compulsive overeater in Muncie, Indiana. Thank you for everyone on the phone giving service. And Danny, thank you for your sharing powerfully and authentically from the heart. My question is for people like me who've been around OA recovery for a long period of time, over a decade, 12 years, who are, like, I am starting to lose the belief the program will ever work for me because I've relapsed so many times. And how would you help the intellectually self-sufficient person who's not?
Yeah, that's a great question. Okay, I think we had a little glitch there, but I can be heard, right?
You can, Danny. Did you get the whole question? I know we talked a little bit about.
Yeah, okay, yeah, cool. I got the question. Yeah. Cool. So, you know, I have this great teacher. I learned from him, if I want different, I do different. I would say that where does grace and action come into your question? So I think for me, when I became entirely abstinent, it was really about accepting the discomfort of entire abstinence. Because I was still, even when I look back and I thought I was entirely abstinent, I wasn't eating my major trigger foods, but I was still eating foods who were mood altering foods. So this can be a cause for relapse. I'm not identifying correctly the mood-altering foods. So I think, no, this is okay. This is healthy. I can eat it, but I can't. And it's triggering the allergy, and it's making me relapse. So I have to be really, really honest and really ask for my higher power to help me and this identification of my alcoholic foods. And for me, it's anything that gives me the effect of ease and comfort. Sometimes it triggers the phenomenon of craving, but sometimes it doesn't, you know. But it's still an altering, a mood-altering food. So this is what's very important for me. And I experienced this with my sponsees when they relapse. They are not identifying their alcoholic foods. So they have some hidden alcoholic foods in their food plan. So that's a cause for relapse. And the other thing that's very clear for me is letting up on the spiritual program of action. You know, the only thing I have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. So if I'm not constantly working, if I'm not praying constantly, meditating, pausing, and asking God for direction, I'm on my self-will. And, you know, I identify with the intellect. I certainly thought the intellect could save me, but, you know, I have a medical degree, a master's degree. never helped me. Actually, it was worse because it gave me the illusion of power. And I really need to experience powerlessness, to seek power desperately. So I need to be convinced that I'm powerless, that there's nothing, no human resource can possibly help me. So I don't know if it answers your question, but that's what I've got. Thank you for the question. Great question.
Okay, thanks. So next up we have Toby, followed by Nick. Toby, good morning.
Good morning. This is Toby W., now living in Florida. Oh, Danny, this was great. So the question I have for you is about your spiritual life. You kind of said a little bit just a minute ago, but what is your day like to enhance and maintain a strong spiritual life?
Well, thank you, Toby. Thank you for that question. That's a great question. So I came in as a believer, but I didn't have any relationship with God. So for me, it's about cultivating and nurturing this relationship through prayer, meditation, and helping others. And the more I do that, I start my day on step 11. I pray, I meditate every single day. I'm at the hospital, I do it on the on-call room. I don't care. I kneel down next to my bed and I do my step 11. This is what I need to do. I need to kneel down, so I do it. And my sponsors, they are like, oh my God, but what if someone comes in the on-call room? What if some, I'm just praying. And so I pray throughout the day. Every time I'm agitated, I pause, I ask for guidance, I listen. When I need a step 10, I do a step 10. Before I interact with my patients, I do a prayer. I ask God to help me to be of maximum service to this person. When I'm getting irritated with a situation, I pause. I ask God to help me. If I need a step 10, I do a step 10. And I sponsor a lot of people. And so I take calls, I make calls. And my sponsees, they know I always call them back. So yeah, this is how I pray a lot throughout the day. Because as I go throughout the day, you know, I have disturbance. I have a human life. So I pause, I listen, I ask for guidance. Thank you for this question. That's a great question.
Thanks, Toby. Okay, next up, we have Nick, followed by Hannah Yetta. Hey, Nick, how are you?
Good morning. Family, Nick F. in Tennessee, recovered alcoholic, recovering compulsive overeating. Danny, wow, thank you so much. So my question is, what would you say to someone like me who my last experience in serving others or service to others was preaching, like literally, and then too, right, I'm a nurse. And so in sponsoring, I guess my question is, like, what early mistakes did you make that I kind of wouldn't want to make as I begin this journey of being a guide?
Wow, amazing. Nick, thank you so much for this question. Yeah, this is really a spiritual program. I love this question. Well, you know, I made, as a sponsor, a lot of mistakes, and I reach out to a lot of recovered fellows and recovered friends, and many of them on this line, asking them for help. And mainly because I was preaching, I was trying to convince them, and also because this book has changed my life in a way that I became a fundamentalist of this book. So I was very passionate about this message, and but you know, this book has nothing to do with fundamentalism. This book teaches me we have no monopoly on God. We merely have an approach that has worked for us. And it says, in the end, we know very little. More will be revealed. So those things and going back to the book constantly, you know, not my opinion, but constantly, okay, let's see the instructions. Let's see the instructions, you know. Not trying to fix them, just showing them, okay, this was my path. This is how I implemented the instructions. Now you implement the instructions, and hopefully you will find God. Hopefully you will find your higher power. Really getting out of the outcome, of the results. And this was really hard for me, you know, especially because I had this tendency in my disease to be a savior, right? So I wanted to save people, to rescue people. So, but I really needed to let go of the results. And this is really when, for me, the joy of sponsorship comes in. When I'm really a step guide, you know? But this is really, it took me a lot of working the steps and a lot of steps then to really resize me and understand what was my role there as a sponsor. I'm only a step guide, you know? I'm only there to show them this is the path so they can have their own experience. And hopefully find their power. Yeah. So thank you. This is an amazing question. Thank you.
Thanks, Nick. Okay. Good morning. Honey, you have to press star one. There you
go. I got it. It just didn't, my pressing wasn't hard enough, I guess. Thank you, Larry, for your service. And Danny, what an amazing, spiritual, uplifting talk and answers to the questions. You've already answered a couple of mine, but I'm going to ask you a different question. My first one was on validation, which you answered so lovely. When you say that you pause, are there any, I've been in this program for a long time, and I've been trying to pause for a long time, and I still have difficulty with it. I'm 73 years old and I still have a hard time pausing. Do you have some kind of a trigger or some kind of a thought or some kind of inspiration that tells you, pause, don't talk, wait, something that might help me in trying to pause? That's my question.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. This is a great question. Yeah. You know, before this recovery, I realized I was highly anxious all the time. So it's really God who has given me this ability to slow down. I was really agitated all the time, and everything was disturbing me and distracting me. But what I've learned is when I pray and when I ask, please, God, direct my thinking. Help me. So just mentally saying this, and sometimes I'm at work, and sometimes it's a chaos, and I just take like 5 seconds. I pause. I take a deep breath. I ask God, please help me. Help me in this situation. Guide my thinking. So this is what I do, and usually it works. It works. Sometimes I need a step 10 when I'm very disturbed, but usually just pausing, it works. So I don't know if this is helpful, but thank you for the question.
Thanks, Hanayeta. Okay, we have time for perhaps, I don't know, 2 or 3 more questions if they're out there.
The G.
Hi, it's Sarah. Can I ask?
Can I ask?
Larry, press star 1.
Okay, I got muted there. So here's the only 2 that I got, but we probably have time for 3. I got Sarah and Judith. One more?
Judith R.
From Nebraska.
Okay, who is from Nebraska? One more time.
Susie.
Okay, I had a hard time getting that one, but we'll come to you. You spell that again for me. S-U.
S as in Sam, U-S-I-E.
Oh, Susie. Okay. All right, Susie. So we're going to start with Sarah, followed by Judith, followed by Susie. Sarah, if you're not Sarah, if everyone would mute their line again. Sarah, good morning to you.
May I be heard?
Yes, you can.
Okay, thank you. So this is my first time going on an OA call. My coach encouraged me to join, and I want to know, first of all, is there like a limit? I'm already 42. Is that too late to join OA? That's my first question. And my second question is, if I would like to join, how do I go about it, like getting a sponsor and stuff like that?
You bet. Those are fair questions.
Okay.
Danny, let me – yeah, go ahead, Danny. You want to try to answer that?
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. So welcome. We are so glad you came. So there are no limits, no age limits for recovery. I'm 47. And I recovered, I've been recovered only for 2 years now, 2 years and 2 months. The only requirement is the desire to stop overeating, according to our third tradition. And so you are extremely welcome here. And I would suggest attending this meeting, maybe other big book meetings where you might find very strong recovery and a sponsor. Here at Vision for You, the sponsors, they announce themselves in the morning, in the second hour, at the end of the second hour. It's at 8 a.m. is our, no, 7 a.m. is our first meeting, the second meeting, 8 a.m., so 10 before 9 Eastern time, they will announce available sponsors. And so that's a great opportunity to get a sponsor. And so I don't know, maybe Larry has better information.
No, I think you handled it great. Sarah, it's the same call-in number. And we study the big book Monday through Friday at the times Danny just gave. I found out they didn't even have a restriction on IQ or anything. They let me in, so I guess I just thought anybody to get in. But anyway, yeah, no, you're welcome here. So just come on to same call-in number Monday morning, you stay on for those first 2 hours Eastern Standard Time. You'll learn more about how to go about it, but we're so glad you're here. So glad you're here. Okay, so let's go on to Susie with the question. Susie, good morning.
Did you mean Judith R?
No, there was a Susie.
Oh, okay.
Judith. Yeah, you're next after Susie. Susie, press star one.
Okay, can I be heard?
You can. Good morning.
Okay, this is maybe a big question. I don't know. Just curious, if you had a very first sponsee, someone calling for help for the very first time, and you say that you go through the steps very quickly, are you just going right to how it works, that chapter? Or are you having them begin reading the big book from the very beginning? That's my question.
Okay, that's a great question. So, yeah, I do it as I was taught to do it. So I go through all the book, but I let them read the book alone. So they read the doctor's opinion, they listen to the podcast, and then they call me and we discuss the important points, what I need to know about the doctor's opinion, because they will become a sponsor. So they need to know how to sponsor their sponsees. And then we go for Bill's story. They listen to the podcast and we answer we make some reflection on Bill's story. Do I eat like Bill drinks? Is my disease progressive? What's the solution? Then we go to there is a solution. We do the same over and over again. But this can be, I can do a chapter a day. So that's very fast. And I encourage them to write the inventory very, very, very quickly. And then as soon as they did, I meet with them. If they live in my country, if they live in São Paulo, my suggestion is to meet them in person and to do step five. Otherwise, we go to Zoom, because step five is really a step where I try to have this eye contact. And then we move on. You know, it works. It's amazing how it works. It does. And then I finish in working with others. I don't go through the other chapters with my sponsors when they want to, but I don't. Usually I don't. Especially because I want to sponsor other people, because there is no big book recovery in my country. So I try to help more people. So I don't know if it answers your question.
Yeah, great question. Thank you so much for that. And so our final question, drum roll, is from Judith. Judith, good morning to you.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Danny. How amazing. My question was more about how you sponsor. And so now that I heard more, which podcasts do you have them listen to? Because there are so many.
Well, yeah. Usually, so I recovered. Because I don't want to violate any tradition here. Because principles, you know, they are about personality. So I recovered listening to the podcast of this meeting. So on this meeting, you have many, many podcasts on each chapter, like Bill's story, There is a Solution. And so on this meeting and another big book meeting where I'm a regular, if you want to know precisely, I will leave my contact information, and I can tell you. But this is what I do. Use all those wonderful tools we have available, the podcasts, On Vision and other Big Book Meeting. And, you know, I God bless the soul who has put the podcast from Vision on YouTube. Because my sponsees, when they don't speak English, what they do is that they activate the transcript from YouTube and they slow down the reproduction of the podcast so you can have it in any language. You can have the podcast with subtitle. So I'm translated subtitle, and I'm very grateful for the person who had this brilliant idea to put the podcast in YouTube. Is that extremely, it is extremely helpful.
Yeah, thanks, Judith. Danny, I'm going to take an executive kind of privilege here. I'm just going to ask a quick question myself, which is just because I'm curious. You know, being from Brazil, and, you know, okay, not everyone can speak all the languages you could speak, but a lot of people, they English, they don't speak. And so do you have an opinion, like, as to what, how do we reach these people better? They're just like us. We have the same problem. There is a solution, right? So what do you have any thoughts about what we could do this better? I'm just curious about your thoughts, if that makes sense.
Yeah, thank you, Larry. That's really a great question, and I've been praying a lot about that, and asking God to help me. I believe in Big Book Messengers. I believe in the facilitators of this message. I unfortunately, at least this was not my experience. I cannot read the Big Book by myself and recover. I need a facilitator. I need a Big Book Messenger. I need someone who will help me understand the message. And for sure, language is a major barrier in accessing this message, especially because there is no Big Book recovery in OA in my country, at least that I'm aware of. And I've been discussing this a lot in some service position. How can we carry this message? How can we overcome the barriers in language, in understanding of the message? And I think AA is doing a great job on this as well. So maybe God is setting up everything in motion because there is a book coming up on how to interpret, how to read the Big Book, how to understand this very deep message. So, yeah, I think I think God's grace is everywhere. And eventually, God will show how we can increase access to this message in all possible ways, overcoming language barriers or understanding barriers or reaching people. So, yeah, I don't know if it answers your question.
It does. I know that's a pretty broad question, but you did a great job answering that. And thank you so much as we wrap up, Danny. Just such a powerful message of depth and of hope. So thank you for that. Stick around again. We're going to offer Danny's contact information at the conclusion of this program after the recording. Let me give once again the share ID number for this morning's presentation. That number is 21,784. That's 21784. We're now going to close this meeting with a reading from the Big Book on page 164 in a chapter called A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.